So production nook, if we could get a nice hail to the chief, you know, kicking in at the top of this. All right, guys. So last week was our Super Tuesday episode. Didn't really go as planned. And, you know, I think we all know that there was that bombshell New York Times piece that reported and looked into our brother Bernard and reported, really, unfortunately, that, yes, it appears there is a post, an account on Big Soccer under the name Pee Wee Restan that once posted, "What do you guys think about ProRel? I just think it is a disgrace that in the richest country on earth, we can't have an open pyramid to allow soccer at the grassroots level." Obviously, this is disqualifying. And a useful idiot for Carlos, or for the enemies of Carlos Cordero. So, yeah, obviously we cannot endorse Bernie Sanders anymore. He's non-viable, non-option. So, as Ben Mindstands announced, you know, we got to evaluate these other candidates to see who we're going to endorse for president. Thankfully, we had four other people send in our questionnaire.
We painstakingly interviewed them. We have recorded them on video, but
some of them are here.
Yeah, but like I'm just saying that our video interviews are totally lost.
Oh, I mean, this is an audio format, so you know, and unfortunately, you know, Chris Matthews is not here to intervene as it would be a conflict of interest. But, you know, first off, I want to welcome to the 202 studio New Jersey's own Senator Cory Booker. Welcome, Cory.
Thank you for having me on 202. As you guys know, I may have dropped out of the race and endorsed
Joe Biden.
But I'm proud to say that I'm in it to win it for this coveted 202 endorsement. As you may know, I got my BA at Stanford, but I like to say that I got my PhD in the streets next to the Harrison Kearney census-designated subdivision of the New York portion of the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania metropolitan statistical area. So I'm extremely proud and excited to be here to support the chosen Major League Soccer partner of Bayer Pharmaceutical and Prudential Insurance Company. So, as you guys know, Bayer Pharmaceutical has been producing innovative medical technologies since 1930s Germany and continues that strong tradition in our hometown of unincorporated northern New Jersey today. So I know you guys are worried about the coronavirus, but fear not. Thanks to some innovative legislation introduced with my Republican colleague, Senator Moribund Margolis from Tennessee, all Northern New Jersey soccer fans can simply go to their local charter school, and after taking out a quick and easy payday loan, they're entered in a lottery for a voucher to cover half an hour of a TaskRabbit to stand in line for the vaccine for coronavirus, should it ever be developed. And just for you guys, thanks to the hard work of Mark DeGrandpree, the winners of this lottery will be announced in the 69th minute of the next Bayer Pharmaceutical soccer match right here in New Jersey. Yeah, it's a big deal. This is common sense solution that we like to do here in New Jersey.
But Corey, our next home match isn't until March 28th. By that time, the virus might have millions.
Look, we cannot enforce purity tests and make the good the enemy of the perfect here, okay?
Geez. Okay. Thanks, Cory. Thanks for that coronavirus thing. But, you know, maybe it's best we move on to our next questionnaire filler out. And it's another New Jersey politician, local guy, State Senator Ronald Zellman.
Hi, Senator. Hi.
Sure. Let's make this quick.
Yeah. So, Senator, you've brought home millions of dollars in public funding for projects on the Passaic Riverfront. And just wondering, what do you think about the local development across the river in Harrison?
Look, I told you I don't touch that. It's fucked up. But you guys let New York in on this thing for Champions League. And now that's their project, their grants, and their jobs. All right. So, look, do you need anything from me? You know, I was talking to some old guys in Morristown, and, you know, this whole Luke Rogers situation, you know, I could ask around.
Thanks, but no thanks, Senator. But are you saying NYCFC might be involved in no-show jobs at Red Bull Arena?
Whoa, what the fuck? Are you wearing a wire? What are these mics? I gotta go. Don't call me on this phone.
He was
is kind of uptight about something. Yeah, I don't know.
Wasn't expecting
sounded
that.
Like he was I don't know why he wouldn't be excited about development on the Passaic River Esplanade, but all right. Well, you know, maybe it's best we take a step out of the political world, you know, out of the establishment. So our next respondent is actually MSG's own Shep Messing. This is a big get for us. Yeah,
wow. America's sweetheart, yeah.
I tell you what, Steve.
What?
Wow, Bunacan duel. Are you kidding me? You know, if I'm Red Bull, I'm furious.
Shep, are you okay? We're not talking about...
Yes. Of course I'm okay. And I'm happy to announce that I am endorsing Joe Biden for president.
Shep, we're
Steve.
Here. Shep, we're evaluating you for this endorsement.
And let me finish. Listen, I was with Joe on that fateful night in Soweto, and we just finished a match against Orlando Pirates, Steve, and Joe and I resolved to go figure out this apartheid situation once and for all. All right, so Joe takes me to this nice van, and what do you know? Inside is my goalkeeping mentor, an inductee of the Southern British Columbia Soccer Hall of Fame, Bruce Grobbelaar. Took me a moment to recognize him, Bruce, though, because, you know, he was wearing a balaclava. And he had this big machine gun with this weird Dutch-looking flag on it. Would you believe that? It looks kind of like the City FC patches. Anyway, you know, he's saying a lot of awful, really nasty words. Must have been that Afrikaans, Steve. Anyway, once we get back from driving to Robben Island, I turn to Pele. You remember Pele? And I said, talk about a great escape, Steve!
Wow, okay, thanks, Shep.
Shep, you know, forceful as always.
Hi, corroboration of Joe Biden's apocryphal Soweto Robben Island journeys. Didn't know that Bruce, you know, Rhodesian national team goalkeeper Bruce Grobbelaar was involved, but... Finally, to round this out, we have somebody else from the soccer world, kind of a hybrid, somebody from the soccer world and kind of the political world. It is former FIFA and CONCACAF executive Jack Warner. Now, Jack's voice was not available for this, as he is in hiding pending extradition to the United States. But thankfully, our lawyer and agent, Ben Meinstein, was able to acquire a transcript of a phone call in response to our questionnaire. So I will read this transcript now. Listen, you rat bastard, Chuck.
Ooh, that's a way to start.
I know you have it. I know you kept it. I know you lied to Blatter, and I know you were on that plane with Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton. I visited the base of the soccer pyramid. I saw there's only a note left by that poor fool Caesar. I know you have the gem. I know where it is. Everyone thinks it's so funny you bought a flat in Trump Tower for your cats, but I know. I've seen Guy Ritchie's entire filmography 8 times, Chuck. I know. I'm going to go to Trump Tower. I'll hire a kid to climb up the sides with suction cups if I have to, and do the Heimlich on your cats until they puke up that gem, Chuck. You thought I was going to threaten to cut them open, didn't you? Who do you... Oh, God. He's coming. He's here. Did you send him? Has he seen you? Oh, God. It's Pat. It's PB. He is here. His fingers are light and nimble. He never sleeps. He says that he will never die. He posts in light and in shadow, and he is a great favorite. He never sleeps, Pat. He is posting. He says that he will never die. And then the transcript just ends there. That's awfully intense.
Wow. Yeah.
I say that last one kind of reminds me of a couple things. I can't really put my finger on it.
I could almost envision Jack saying this while he's in an outhouse. You know, this PB guy is just kind of enveloping him. Just my 2 cents.
But. Yeah, and growing in size. Yeah, this Pat, that rings a bell. I can't.
Seems like you could just never escape this kind of character.
Yeah, you know? It just kind of pops up. Everyone keeps on fooling everyone. Well, that's a curious entry of presidential nominees. What do you guys think? Who should we go with?
I'd like to say first off that I appreciate the diversity of the board that we've seen and the strength of our candidates here.
Yes.
That's the most important thing, and it's what we need to do to beat Donald Trump in November.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have...
Everybody had a positive message.
We have 3 men over the age of 60, and as we know, that's the most important people in the world, in the voting bloc. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who should decide what happens to the climate. They're the ones who should, be coughing on us all the time. So very happy that Jack, Shep, and, Zelman, we're here. Yeah, big run. So, you know, Corey was able to give a shout out to the pharmaceutical companies that are so important to our local economy.
Don't get nearly enough of a say in things.
Yeah. But nonetheless, I think I'm still going to have to endorse Tulsi Gabbard, obviously.
See, I think I'm still in for Hickenlooper myself. Oh, you know what? It turns out everyone we interviewed just endorsed Joe Biden.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess Shep didn't say that.
Right.
All right.
So I guess that's where we're going.
Yeah, we'll have to see. We'll evaluate it on how Chris Armas does. But maybe I'll vote for Chris Armas or Kevin Thelwell to be president. But all right, maybe we can draw a line there and the music can play now. Episode 154 of View from 202, the coronavirus special. We're all here. We're cooped up. We're together.
We're all coughing on each other.
We're sitting on each other's laps.
We're gonna send the mic filters to every nursing home. We're smooching. Nassau County.
Tomorrow we're getting in a van. We're going to continue to smooch until we get to Florida and we knock on the doors of every Biden voter and cough on them. This is our electoral strategy to get Chris Armas elected president of the United States. And look, if you don't like it, get a ground game. Get earned media to beat it. So very proud here to announce our coronavirus special election strategy. Meanwhile, the Red Bulls drew 1-1. It's our second week of the 2020 season. And we have 4 points. Team's undefeated, winning the cup. We can end now, right?
They won in Sandy. Well, or not? They didn't get the Drew. They got a draw in Sandy, guys.
You know what?
A draw.
You know what this
freaking draw in Sandy.
Do you know what this Liverpool team couldn't have done? Is remain undefeated.
Yeah, I'd like to see them do that on a Sunday, inexplicably noon in Sandy, Utah. Fucking eat your heart out, Klopp. Can't do that. I mean, I guess they don't have elevation in England, do they? Celtic should build their stadium at the top feet.
like 60 meters away and up on top of the hill.
Yeah. But 1-1 draw in Salt Lake. We have 4 points now.
Kicking ass. We're doing it.
What do you guys think about this game? Yeah.
What did I think about this game? Mm-hmm. I didn't think much about this game at all.
I have to agree.
It was, there are like no tangible moments for me to pick out. It's like that one picture that you see occasionally that's just like, name one thing in this picture and
that
you
I hate that thing.
And it was like that in the soccer game. That's exactly what it was.
And the funny thing is that it's impossible to describe this image to anyone.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know.
It's like it looks like it's in a room, but there's not like
it's just a bunch of junk on the table.
The closest thing that like I can get close is like something kind of looks like maybe a mink or a ferret or something.
Like a stuffed monkey or something.
And it's like the worst part
of
it. And then it just like, yes, thank you. Yeah, that is exactly what this game was.
This isn't as good as that, but I was going to say it was like 90 minutes of those like crap 90s football Twitter accounts of just like, you know, teams just flopping around in the 6-yard box, just, you know, comically falling and crashing around the ball and then not going in somehow.
That was one of the more interesting parts, or the better parts, is that we get a nice acrobatic save from Jensen. We get a nice double save from him later on, and we get that goal line clearance and block from Duncan. That was a little bit of excitement.
And Davis.
Yeah. So that was a little bit. I can't really remember last time we got a save like that. I don't mean to demean, you know, Robles or whatever, but like maybe like that famous Portland double save was maybe the last time I was like, oh, hey, look at that goalkeeping. But that was nice. Is it maybe it could become the Jensen zone a bit? But it's a 1-1 game, and then I guess maybe I'll shamelessly plug my Once a Metro column again in on the way to saying my thoughts about this. But just for that, the way that I approached it was I used the expected goal figure for this game for us, which was 0.17, to confirm my suspicion that nothing happened in this game.
Look, if we can outperform our expected goals like that, I think Bernie can win Michigan.
That's true. Yeah. Although it gives me pessimism on the prospect of everyone slowly realizing that the guy at the helm has lost his fucking mind and has no idea what's going on. Maybe that won't happen. I mean, maybe this could open a door to a larger thing about expected goals. But yeah, I think that really just shows that, as we've been talking about, after the final whistle, I was like, what happened this game? And seeing that number confirmed it for me. I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. We really didn't create anything chances other than the Caceres golazo. Because, I mean, we've had previous dirty, like, ugly draws before, and ugly wins for that matter. But I don't know. I mean, usually there, it wasn't to this degree where we, like, really didn't create any chances. I mean, I think compared to what we said last week, really no combination between the attackers, like all the fluidity we kind of like cautiously praised last week wasn't really there. And it wasn't even like we missed chances. Like, honestly, outside of the Caceres shot, it was a lot of, you know, it was like the soccer match in The Simpsons, you know, a bit, and just chasing the ball. So, you know, maybe if we're gonna entertain a devil's advocate, maybe the team shuts down after getting a goal and tries to hold that and almost pulls it off.
Maybe they're not quite in like mid-season fitness and it wasn't elevation and stuff, but like that's something that you gotta be prepared
for. It wasn't like a stamina issue though. Like the effects were immediate, right?
Like, yeah, I think also it's just like guys are standing around again. Yeah. Far apart from each other again. And it was the same exact lineup.
Oh, yeah, there were a bunch of freeze frames that I think that I just saw Dando take of just like people way away from whoever's holding the ball.
Yeah, just like not so much plan. And then even usually when you try to shut down, when the Red Bulls have tried to shut down a game like that kind of strategically and grind something out, you can usually see the evidence of like how the team is planning or thinks they might nick one. And there was none of that. We didn't get a corner all game.
Did we not get a corner all game?
I think we didn't get a corner all game.
Wow.
There wasn't any really fast breaks or quick turnovers. You know, we had a low possession number, which is, you know, totally potentially fine. If you're a listener, you know, we're not possession people. But it was possession from chasing the ball. It wasn't from, like, constantly causing chaos. So, you know, thank God for that Caceres strike. Or else it was dire watching.
Not only that, but the VAR too.
That's true. Yeah, that's right. But I mean, almost, I mean, you say like lucky or whatever for the Caceres goal, but it's almost like, especially when it comes that early, like us scoring a goal and going ahead appears to just freak the fuck out of this coaching staff.
Yeah.
Like,
what do we do?
And, well, it's either it freaks them out or it makes them overconfident, whatever. It's just, you know, obviously, not obviously, I guess, for some people, but like, you know, a lot of people have gone over it that, you know, when we get a lead, we appear to start doing this, you know, keep away game, like pretty nakedly. And it just does not fit our personnel. It does not fit the way that these guys, at least the ones who have been here long term, have been conditioned to play for years. It's just a mess and just seems like something that is arbitrarily done in a hope of achieving, you know, like we talked about a lot when Armas first took over and there was a lot of press quotes from him about, you know, I want to continue what we were doing, but I want to add this wrinkle of playing possession. And it's clear that whatever way he has installed that has either completely confused the team or completely pacified them from what made, you know, the pressing structure on both sides of the ball so efficient. And it's just, you know, bad, and it's happening in tons of games for the last year and a half, and you know, we keep getting away with it. But
yeah, I'm surprised we did. Peaches, I feel like this was like on the brink of becoming what the Seattle game was.
Oh,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
where we got out to this lead, and I say it to you because you were there. But like,
I don't remember
it was like, we were like, I guess
we mostly sang like Blink 182 songs in the stands. Like,
yeah, but we lost that game. What, like 5-2
Something like that. Yeah.
And where we went up ahead.
My lawyer has texted me reminding you that you do not have to answer questions. You don't have to. You have the right to remain silent.
But yeah, no, it was, I feel like we were there the whole game, just like about to fall apart.
It's like, I feel like if you look at this game and see kind of when the goal happened and like how little chances we created on paper and not watch the game, you would think like, oh, you know, like they went in for a smash and grab, but it wasn't even that. Like it wasn't,
yeah, not really,
like we didn't
yeah.
even play Mourinho ball, you know, like it's not like the case where we like, we're going in to try to get a goal scored early and then like, you know, just sit back and take it. Like we were just like being lackluster at everything.
One segment that I picked out, and it shows up also on those little like possession histograms that the MLS site generates, where it shows you like 5 minute segments of the game and who controlled it, is that at the beginning of each half is the only time we had possession. And you can see at the beginning of the second half in particular was really the only stretch of the game where like we had a prolonged period on the ball, and we looked more comfortable in a way, and we looked like we had more of a plan, but it lasted like 5 to 8 minutes. And you know, I think it culminated with that one final switch where it finally gets to Kaku and he slapped it over one time. And other than that, it was totally aimless. I mean, it succeeded in moving the ball around the field, but it didn't build to anything. It killed 6 or 7 or 8 minutes maybe, but then immediately afterwards it just went back to RSL kind of running the game. And if you know, the fact that that was right after halftime suggests to me that that was a reflection of the team talk and maybe like a plan that they wanted to do, because they were not doing that for most of the half. So it seems like a red flag to me that they were able to execute something new out of the half. It didn't seem to really have a point, and it didn't seem to have any sort of permanence. Even when they were trying to do that, it lasted only 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think compared to last week when we were saying, oh, there's more people home, Patel and Thelwell are helping, you know, maybe this is a look at the limitations of that, you know.
Or it's an illumination of what happens when you have good analysis but poor coaching, because when a team plays to a, you know, a clear, you know, objective for like 5-10 minutes and then just loses it for the rest of the half, that's a team that either doesn't believe in the tactics or has not been drilled in them appropriately. Mm-hmm. Like that's one of the few areas where, you know, like I like the cliche where it's like, you know, a good manager makes his team 10% better, a bad manager makes his team like 50% worse, mm-hmm. or whatever. A big part of the 10% that can make you better is making sure that your team follows a strategy through an entire period of time, mm-hmm. and can adapt the strategy to different game states. And when it's just clearly being just abandoned after 5-10 minutes, mm-hmm. that's as clear a sign of anything that, you know, we, the public just watching on TV, can see, mm-hmm. when a team is not drilled properly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that kind of goes with this idea, at least that I think we've been relitigating since like 2019, that we're not committing in any specific way.
And
we're just so wishy-washy as a team. Like
the players are just hearing words,
right?
Like, and they're not press, like full press,
right? Like, they're not going in on like the actual tactics, full in, all in on like this, or like, you know, it very much seems to me like your teams right now just have to go one way or the other, in terms of like, you got to go out and kill them, or you just got to like, you know, be maybe like a smash and grab team. But we're like in the middle, and mm-hmm. this has been a grievance that we've aired for a while now, is that like being a jack of all trades is not good if we're not like a master of any of them.
Yeah. And I think this is a real flagrant example of like, I don't think you can watch this game and be like, oh, RSL's figured us out. Like, come on now. Figured what out? Like,
we figured this out.
Yeah. We haven't. Yeah, I'd say we haven't even figured this out. Like, what is there to figure out? Like, what's, you know? But, and, you know, maybe just like the brief note on expected goals as well, that I feel like, you know, just, and maybe it's a note on our general approach to analyzing the game, if there are any new listeners out there, that like, I think this is an instance where like in previous seasons, there maybe were, there was discussion of like, oh, look, like we're outperforming expected goals, or like, you know, we have like 0.5 expected goals more than the other team. Oftentimes it gets used like that. I think that in those instances, it's often just like noise and like not, mm-hmm. not really telling. Cause like, you know, it's made up stat. Well, it's a potent phrase, but like, it's not a perfect exhaustive stat, but this is a game where it's like looking at it and it tells you a lot when it shows it as 0.17.
Like we're underperforming at like 5 times.
Yeah. So I don't intend to like in the future be like, oh, look, we had like, you know, 1.2 expected goals, but we only got one goal. What gives? Like, no, that's not going to be the move. But in this game, it's like, yep, numbers prove it. Eyes prove it. There was nothing going in this game. Just real aimless. But I think maybe before we talk about some defensive issues, maybe for the sake of balance, we highlight some, I think, better performances, which, you know, of course I mentioned Jensen earlier, but Tarek comes in for the mm-hmm. second week with long out, and seems to have a more effective game at playing emergency defense, it must be said, and seems to track his defenders well, seemed to be more awake, seemed to be more physical. So I think Amra Tarek is having a good start to the season.
Well, I think like, okay, I mean, like we're talking about the positives right now,
which leads directly into
I was going to say like Amra Tarek's like positivity, I think, is largely shined by the contrast to how Tim Parker's been doing.
Yes. So Tim Parker, you know, last week, I think I said, oh, you know, when Long gets fit again, let's just, you know, do Parker and Long classic, not be crazy. But after this week, I don't know. It's like, we're seeing some persistent problems with Tim Parker, aren't we, that we saw last year. And as, you know, Nando clipped brilliantly, really mirrors all the way back to the November match in Atlanta in 2018, where it's only a Douglas Martinez unforced handball in this game that keeps him from getting beat almost identically twice by, you know, it feels generous to call it a run. Just a guy at the far post just heading over him, where Tim Parker is just not aware of where guys are.
The ball you could see from 6 miles away, just the right back waltzing up for like 10 seconds, clearly getting ready to put a deep ball to the far post, and who's guarding the far post? Tim Parker just standing.
Consistently like 6 yards, too shallow. Same thing as the Joseph Martinez goal.
It's like insane. It's insane when you watch the Martinez handball goal that like clearly they have a group of guys set to attack Parker mm-hmm. on deep balls. Like even more so than the Atlanta game.
Guys, let's be fair. You don't really have to jump when you play lacrosse. So
true.
It isn't an aerial game. That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, Douglas Martinez, it really should have been a goal. It's just like he was sloppy and jumping and the ball hit his hand on the way in. So like in terms of like the defender's perspective, totally unforced error from Martinez on that. So really like, you know, RSL is
doing their part for this
coin. Their part, a coin flip away from beating Parker twice on this. But of course it's the stoppage time goal as well. That is really the more, even more glaring similarity to the Atlanta one. One, you have to ask, why can't Tim Parker jump? And two, what's going on? Why isn't he marking? And I took a tour back through the old Once a Metro archive and found that, you know, James Justice piece that he ran last year that talked about Tim Parker at length. And there was that one anecdote about Parker staying late to work on his passing and distribution, where he was receiving zipped balls from CJ Brown and Chris Armas. And I think that caught our attention last year a little bit. But it reminded me again this week because, you know, one, it's weird that he's working on something as simple as a mechanic like that. I mean, maybe his passing could improve, but like his touch, I mean, he's 26, 27 years old. He's been on the team for 3 years.
Yeah.
I saw you had
a conversation, Cork, about this.
Yeah. Like, how is that the one thing that's being worked on, but we're having consistent man marking errors?
Exactly.
Yeah. For 18 months. Is anyone giving him coaching on the marking? Is anyone pointing this out?
It's pretty shocking. Like in even last week too, in Cincinnati, that, or not here, but again, Cincinnati, that, he's kind of floating. I mean, and I don't know. I don't know. It's almost, you know, Are they reacting to people complaining about Parker not being unleashed more? Who knows? But it's almost like it feels that way sometimes, where it's like he is kind of given a lot more license to roam and show up in different parts of the field when the ball turns over, which is kind of strange. And yeah, I mean, there's only so much you can say about, you know, the fact that he just clearly has no grasp of how to attack the ball in the air, even when it's coming so obviously.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, as far as the passing drills thing, I mean, that's almost more of like a global thing with how bad the situation is with the whole team and what the guidance is being given to the whole team. Because I mean, that's just something that is like teenager stuff. I mean, that's a technical skill,
right?
But that's like, supposed to be, you know, in you before you even become a pro. I mean, that's something that doesn't change. Yeah. In your 20s. And the fact that we have coaches who are spending time thinking that they can engineer something like that is not very confident.
I do not think I can name a professional athlete who's gotten just much better at passing with over time in their career, just through practice.
I mean, yeah, it's as far as everything I've read, it's pretty conventional wisdom in you know, soccer, sports science, that, you know, players' technique is pretty set once they're, you know, late teens.
Right. And you look at Tim Parker and you don't think of him as very much of a finesser. Like,
I actually think he's like better on the ball than people give him. His striking and passing is terrible,
right?
But he's actually pretty smooth, like with his touch and stuff like that. But it's when he has to make decisions and has to actually serve the ball, it's a mess.
Yeah, I guess it's like the mental part, really.
But yeah,
it's like, are they trying to Rick and Keel him or something? You know, it's like,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
But I mean, even then, that's really just more. I mean, no, that's actually an interesting counterexample, because with Rick and Keel, the baseball player who like had a huge crisis of confidence in pitching and came back after a couple years as an outfielder, that was an instance where the mechanics were the one thing he had. Mm-hmm. He had a strong arm. He could hit. Mm-hmm. It was just like taking some time to mentally refocus as a different position player. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to teach him to hit as a 20-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
So different sport, but even trying to come up with like a parallel, it's like, I don't know if that's gonna work.
No, it's just he's so clearly a player that needs to like not have to think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that was
which is why we got him.
Right. And that was a huge, you know, huge part of what made the Red Bull or the EDS, whatever you want to call it, system, you know, easy to play for the guys who were there and easy to plug in new guys for the guys who showed up, is that you don't have to think. It is just like acceleration all the time, every, you know, just maximalist, every time you think you should go bigger, you should. And Parker especially just seems like the kind of player who, once that framework is taken away, he's completely lost and does not know how to figure things out himself.
I mean, look, I'm just a guy who plays pickup at upper 90, but I think that's kind of the case with every soccer player a little bit. Like, if you don't have to think, or like, you know, if your instincts are driving you to play, you're going to play better.
Right.
Like if you're going in and not thinking, if you're like overthinking about something, you're going to lose the ball. Right. It's just like,
you enter that trance, you know?
Right. It's not even necessarily about tactics, but so much as like, you know, not making sure he's not overthinking everything,
which it's like every single player seems almost, to be.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
It's the muscle memory almost. Like, you know, you take a shot, you don't want to be thinking about like the mechanics of taking a shot while you do it. Right.
Yeah. And then I think it also stands out because, you know, the club made a very clear point to highlight Parker over this offseason. Like, comms was asked to put together a video and like a little story highlighting him as a, you know, leadership role and like stepping up in that. And there was even, you know, some rumors that I think he was actually legitimately maybe being considered as team captain before Sean Davis got the nod, which is notable that he's been kind of struggling on this and kind of been uncoached for this long, because it's, you know, ask the question, like, what is it that the management, both Armas and Hamlet, like about him? Is it, you know, evidently they didn't think that his touch and passing was good enough for like the vision of build up, because, you know, we heard all those stories about him getting that training last year. The marking has been not good. I mean, I think it kind of feels like it ties back to Armas's general ethos, is that they're similar guys that kind of like both come from college soccer and that kind of like orbit of American soccer, and they're both kind of you know, big men on campus types coming from very American sports environments and talk the similar kind of way. Parker definitely, you know, talks very fluently in the language of togetherness. As they
I don't
keep
get the impression he's
about
a student of the game.
No, yeah. I mean, Tim Barker is like cliche, definitely like the you know, four letter guy, right? Like, didn't he literally like
soccer was the sport that he happened to be best at.
Yeah,
like,
but
by fear, physical power.
You know, it just it really seems like Armas may have clinged on to him more in that function, and that's something he recognizes and likes, and he explicitly. Clearly asked him to be like a leadership and like a spokesperson for togetherness and all that. And it's easy to start imagining why this could be a problem in the locker room, where if like this guy's losing his man for 18 months, and then there's other guys who are getting crap for not being spoken up or who are not getting highlighted or getting blamed for looking languid on the ball, that would piss you off, right? If this guy keeps on getting all the credit, I think the same thing kind of applies to Connor Lade a little bit. You know, Connor, nice guy. He doesn't, you know, post as dubious shit as Parker does, to my knowledge. So he's got that going. But, you know, Connor Lade's also very, you know, same mold, hustle player, call it, you know, as a former undersized white hustle player can say, you know, we get
coaches love attention.
You get the representation, you know, it's there.
Scrappy gym rat.
You get to be named alumni representative and get a nice little ceremony, you know? So.
Yeah. Wow. Like not to get too like extra personal with it, but man, like the way you just put it, like really is just kind of like, man, if I'm some of the guys on the team who some of whom aren't here anymore. And yeah, I'm seeing this guy who like is getting lost in so many big games and stuff like that. And not only is he not getting shit, but he's also like, you know, showing up in costumes and like goofing around in the airport and shit like that, and he's considered like a team leader, but I'm a cancer, like,
yeah,
you know.
And he's showing up in 12 degrees against Santos. Even Sean Davis, who wasn't even captain at the time, is saying, what are you doing, dude? Why are you trying to flex? It's fucking freezing. You're gonna play like shit when you're that frozen up. And lo and behold, he did, you know. So,
I mean, I think this is kind of a recognized thing for the expectations of Tim Parker so far. Like, I think other people are noting this in general.
Yeah. And, but I think it's important to tie it into the, like, it's an example of how, like, the tone of the manager and, like, his environment and the things that he pushes and the talent he recognizes, like, matters. You know, if what's important is Tim Parker speaks the language of togetherness all season, this could continue forever. It may not really matter because, you know, afterwards, you know, it's the team's club. It's team media's. I mean, it's the club's job to put together good press releases. It's literally their job. But, you know, it's all about the togetherness thing.
I forgot to say this before, but Britt, as a standard bearer for our podcast, I'm glad of what you're doing on Once a Metro.
Thank you. I'm going out of my way to make sure I endorse the most problematic candidates for president as possible in order to provide balance, you know, to these humors of the podcast. But thank you. And I'm going to try to stop going on EDSS and spreading lies about this show, but it's very hard to avoid it.
He kind of just makes you do it.
It's similar to the thing that we saw Jack Warner say in that transcript.
Yeah. I mean,
just like an odd pull.
It's part of our retainer with him. I mean, we're just on standby at any time for anything he wants to do.
It's true.
He just makes us dance whenever we need to.
We all signed NDAs too. So.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to say that technically.
Oh, it's part of the intention is that you will violate the NDA. So then he can always have that threat over you, you know, because it's
get you further.
It's actionable.
Debt.
Yeah. But yeah, Tim Parker, keep eyes on that. You know, is that going to last forever? You know, and then is it.
Good thing we only have like one other senior center back on the roster, so we can easily solve this problem if it becomes untenable.
But what is long status? Do we know when he's coming back?
My understanding is that it's week to week hamstring tightness, right? I I think it should be. I mean, yeah, that's another point. If it's another scenario where Long's just quietly out for 3 months, a la BWP, yeah. It's like, what's going Sweet. On there?
Is that what they're saying?
No, but like, I hadn't loose, thought about like, that. Yeah, you know,
he's gonna be day to day for 4 months until he gets sold to West Ham.
Yeah, he's just waiting. And then we're gonna hear that Aaron Long was lazy and self-entitled.
That's pretty much been like the party line, at least with like people outside the club observing have been like, oh, Aaron Long, like just, you know, packed it in after he didn't get his big European move. Cause you know, that's the only thing that matters. Players aren't motivated by anything else.
Right.
Other than getting to move to one of the teams that you can play as on FIFA.
How dare you bring up American soccer Twitter here?
Mm. Yeah. But you know, I'm glad that we have Den Leader Armas here to give us a pep talk. Other notes, I guess, is that one thing that struck my attention is the bench for this game was fucking weird. Like there was some talent on it, you know, because we've got a talented roster, but it was weird because he subs on Shikovsky, which is in a total reversal of what happened last week. He doesn't do the advanced pressing thing. He kind of just goes on to do general midfield stuff like last year.
It was for Velo, right?
And it was for Kaku, interestingly enough. So Kaku's had two early subs. Which my guess is that that's like they're trying to preserve his minutes. So he's like fresh in October or November or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, Shikovsky comes on and I was looking at the bench. It's like, who else did he have as options anyway? Because Omir and Muil were sent to RB2 to start. And then that left Sims, I think, comes on late, who's a winger.
Sims for Velo, right.
Then we had Barlow, who comes on very late, and Jorgensen there, both two, you know, center forwards who are similar point in their career. And then Shikovsky, that was the entirety of our...
And Tolkien,
yeah. And Nihlis,
making a little boy. Little boy, taking a little boy out of the city.
But that's the entirety of our, you know, attacking or forward options on the bench is Shikovsky, Barlow, Jorgensen, Sims. Like, that is one of the weirder benches. Like, I just don't feel solid about any. Like, what if we needed a midfielder? Like, not having Muil there. Like, what if we, like,
two sets of redundant players?
Like having both Jorgensen and Barlow when you have Royer and White on the field starting already. It's weird. I almost feel like, you know, not even having Bezecor around, like, to be on the bench is, I don't know.
And like having Jorgensen not be in the first team, but still not be good enough to play.
Yeah.
Why do you even have him around if he still necessarily needs to be?
There's no pathway to
in
minutes.
USL. Yeah.
Yeah. We have White.
He's now just in limbo completely, not developing as like a 19-year-old.
White, Royer, Jorgensen, and Barlow all travel. Meanwhile, Muil and Fernandez get 2's minutes. Why not have Jorgensen get the minutes?
How would this not be Alex. A game that Muil would be huge
exactly,
for?
Exactly, yeah.
Like, yeah.
You know.
Like Alex instead of Shikovsky wouldn't make
just,
sense
go,
to me.
Going on the road and having like no defensive-minded subs, like period, is a kind of a big red flag.
Muil can play anywhere, right? I mean, like he's played in every... section right wing of back. The yeah right exactly he could play pretty much anywhere wide
and why is Alex Muil getting minutes at RB2 anyway? We know he's a first team player.
I think Armas has no intention of really playing him on this team,
but like, well, then why give him minutes on two? Why not trade him?
It's a little early, but I mean, parachuting, I think he would. I mean, I'm sure he'll go.
But we also like uploaded like 14 wingers.
Yeah, I was gonna say, why do we have like 11 wingers on the team now? And that seems like a very like desperate, like, you know, making it up as you go along, you know, personnel strategy. Also,
I mean, it sounds like they're listening to the Doyles of the world, being like, "Oh, they just need a winger," which is the thing that you say about every decent team that hasn't won. You know, you're like,
they need a guy who can create some extra goals out of scratch.
Yeah. Look, like, if they just had a Cristiano Ronaldo type, that's also baffling too, because I don't think like Josh Sims necessarily has a place here anymore.
Who is Josh Sims?
Yeah.
What is Josh Sims?
I mean, what place did he have to begin with?
Yeah. Last season he looked nice okay because like he could play as like a traditional winger who like gets the end line and throws a cross in. But now that we're playing like the 2-2-2, he doesn't really
do it, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't fit for him at all.
And, no. You know, like, Alex does kind of play a little bit better in that pressing role, at the very least.
Good Dorset lad, that Josh Sims. But, yeah, it's like, and also parachuting, you know, Omir at the twos, maybe I could entertain a little bit longer, but like both of them get parachuted in and don't play well because it's a weird Frankenstein lineup where, like, I mean, we should be aware now this is a team sport, and, you know, even in its weird decayed neglected state, Red Bull is still set up to be like a system and anything. Like, so we throw in Muil and Omir to get 90 minutes against Tampa Bay and Montclair, and they don't stand out. Or it's like, why would you think they would? Like what, why? I mean, it's only 1 week, but it's like, yeah, the more I think about it, why wouldn't you have Muil on that bench? You know, like, why?
On a game like that, yeah. When you're going away.
If he's not going to be in the team for a game like that, why is he even in the squad at all? And I'm not saying that because I want him to go at all.
Right. He's extremely, we all recognize his value here.
It's why.
He's also like one of the few winners on the team left. Like, he's not very vocal, but like, you know, one of my favorite images from last year is like after he scored that goal in Yankee Stadium, like a couple minutes later, he got like hit on the head and was bleeding. And he was just like yelling at the ref and like had these bloody hands and was pointing at, and something about it, I was just like, yeah, I fuck with this guy.
He's the
like,
only one with the Felipe energy that I think Cork was talking about. Yeah. Like the fight, the bite.
I mean, he was there. He scored a goal in the 7-0. It was his first goal. You know, he's just like, he's one, you know, maybe that's unsporting though. He's being sent down to learn the Boy Scout code.
My litmus test for RB people is Alex Muil fanhood.
Yeah. But Omir and Muil are two of the more dynamic players. Meanwhile, Barlow and Jorgensen, don't get me wrong, don't pin me down too specifically. They're not literally the same. But for the tense and purposes of this week, same fucking player. Why do you have...
Because you know Jorgensen's not going to... Like, if one goes on, the other's not going on.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
Yeah, and to speak to your, like, system thing, like, the way that our system kind of, like, needs to work for the attack is that there has to be some chemistry there because they're, like, a necessary verticality and flicks and, like...
Yeah.
You know, you heard what... Bob Bradley said about the game against Philly.
They're like a Red Bull team now.
That they're a Red Bull team, that they only play one way, they play forward. So, like, Philadelphia, congrats, has become more of a Red Bull team than we are.
Yeah, I mean, we're nothing. You know, we're in the middle. So, this is...
2007 Chicago.
We are 4 points. We are undefeated. Yes, NYCFC is 0-2. That's hilarious. That's great.
But they also started slow last year.
But you have to at least they like drew 6 games. At least they got 2 losses out of the way. That's nice. Toronto looked good, by the way. I had that game on afterwards when I was writing this up. But, you know, to this point is on, this is the final thing that I really tried to hammer home in the column too, which is like, people, like, there's a context. We're comparing it to last year. Yeah, we have 4 points, but it's not a vacuum. It's not a video game where, like, every, like, week is, like, a totally regenerated thing. We're comparing it to long-held struggles of this specific management thing. Who are you trying to fool by being like, oh, you know, at least we got a point on the road? It's like, we can see it. Are you watching the games? We can see the troubles. It's like, oh, have you considered if everything just completely changed? Oh, you know, I had considered that, you know. It's like the tweet somebody posted about, like, all of you making fun of Trump for screwing up coronavirus or about to screw up coronavirus. What if it turns out this is the one thing he's really good at? You'll look silly then.
You're right. Right. We'll be silly about everything that he's ever done.
I'll be so owned.
But it really is just like, what more do you want?
Yeah.
Why do you expect any better?
Yeah.
It's like,
And I wouldn't
we were kind of there not very long ago.
Like, even if you did the, like, age old arguments, like, oh, if you told me a week ago that we get a point out of RSL,
the first point, the place where we've never won.
Yeah.
We've never won, us.
Yeah.
Our special, like, mystical arrangement of cells, even though it's a different group of 25-ish players every single season, we're always the same. So it matters that
I hate Theseus' ship, goddammit. Don't try to tell me that we aren't literally still in Giant Stadium. It's all of the same bits of concrete. We're just moved to Harrison and put there again. You know?
And the same stench of failure will always follow us.
Yeah.
It's like, even if you told me that going into this game, I would have frankly be a little bit like disappointed, I guess.
Obviously, the team's in a better place than it was when we lost in 2018 in RSL when Carlos Rivas dragged that guy down and we lost 1-0 from the penalty. Obviously, I would switch situations with that. You know, clearly we've
fixed everything.
I've run the math then. And give me a second. Let me pull up my calculator. Mm-hmm. We're averaging, readers should know I'm literally tapping my phone right now. 2 points a game. Damn. 2 points a game. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Undefeated.
Yeah.
If we keep that up the rest of the year, yeah, we'll get that cup. We'll finally get that cup. It'll be no big deal.
Yeah, fucking 538, eat your heart out. Club Sports Stats got nothing on us. But yeah, it's what you actually see. Are you watching the games? I don't know. You know, maybe we'll score 8 again against Minnesota next week. Who are 2-0, by the way, and have scored something like 8 goals.
They're good.
Really we're
good.
Away in Minnesota?
Yeah.
We are, yeah. As we had to remind Corey, we're not playing at home again until March 28th. Minnesota United is 2-0. Yeah, they've scored 8 goals, both at home. I can never remember which one is listed in which order. No, those are both away. They've scored 8 goals away. 3 in Portland and 5 in San Jose. So this is their home opener. Wow, Minnesota. Sick. yeah.
Sick.
So they're scoring like crazy.
So we're gonna win.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, looking at it, who's to say how good these teams are, but still. Minnesota's actually good now, which is I mean, they were like, what?
They were good last year, too, right?
Fourth place at Ultimate last year, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. New reality. So...
Is Heath still doing his thing over there?
Yeah, it's still Heath somehow. He's figured it out.
But. All right. Damn. Owned. Fuck, I forgot about that. That makes me feel much worse.
Yeah, he sucks. I don't know. I mean, it does seem like, we're going to actually win this one. We're going to be the team that, you know, brings them down to earth by completely tripping over our dicks into a win.
Yeah.
To a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Heath thing reminds me that, you know, we have a dumb guy coach, but he doesn't even get sent off like Heath does.
Yeah. He doesn't even, complain and just act salty all the time and sweat through his shirt and, shit.
You know, try to pump up the section or whatever.
Oh my God. Chris Armas is the civility coach.
Den leader, Cub Scout leader. Armas, scouts code.
Chaperone Armas.
Yeah. Chris Armas heard that several of the players had snuck out to go get some Twixes from the vending machine. He even heard that somebody had devised a system where they took one of the hotel coat racks and bent it in such a way that they could jerry-rig it to release the entire bottom row of really stale honey buns.
Both players were punished by being sold to a Champions League club days later.
Chris Armas sat them down and made them eat all of the honey buns in front of him. And then he got mad when they were slow as shit the next day. So
benched them for Reese Buckmaster.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I want to get ahead of this and denounce all of our listeners who've been tweeting snake emojis to Chris Armas. That they are not part of our movement and we will not accept that.
Yeah, no, shape up, as we said before. I think it'd be better if we tweeted, you know, maybe a nice little wolf, because that's the Cub Scout logo, isn't it? At him. Nice little wolf in profile. Scouts promise. Maybe there's another emoji that really gets more at Boy Scout. Even better.
Like the cub paw or something.
Yeah. Is there like a wheat thing? We can make him a Weebolo. Whatever fun. A Weebolo is.
Oh, yeah. The Weebolo thing is like a fleur-de-lis, even, isn't it? Wow. That could be promising. All right. More research is required proper emoji engagement, not harassment, engagement techniques.
Stay tuned next week. We will give you the exact emoji you should be using.
There is a memo that goes out. It's literal. It's ordered. It's coordinated. Coordinated engagement. It's working, guys. It's working. So we're going into this Minnesota game. Maybe we can... Is it time to reopen discussion of the zone?
I think the jury's out though. Like it's not a zone of public perception anymore. It's just kind of a zone of where we're at.
It could be a good heat check for what that public perception is. I mean, yeah. It would feel kind of, well, maybe not though, because I mean, even if we lose this game, even if we get blown out, it's still going to, it's, he can still come back to for the next game or whenever the next game
I'm
is.
Hearing isolated and, rumors of some booze at Red Bull Arena upon the mention of his name.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's true. Yeah. It was kind
that was
of
pronounced. It was,
yeah. At least in my section I was kind of near the South Ward, but anyway, there was some crude language sent his direction, but,
I think we need a new framework is what I'm saying.
No, I think zone works. I mean, cause I mean, the zone is dynamic.
Well, because I was,
it's not just about public perception. We just need to change, I think, what the tenants of the
zone. Well, I was going to say that we might be very firmly in the zone, because if we lose this game, even if we get blown out real bad, we will still be coming out of it, and it'll be, you know, technically easy to say that the narrative's, oh, we're 1-1-1. We're top half of the division probably still.
Yeah, and it's early.
And it's
like
early.
We don't think he's going to get fired next week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like if the only time of three games in that we know if there's a zone or not is if he's like lost all three games and we still have people circling the wagons. Mm-hmm. Until we're kind of at a checkpoint like that. Yeah, I guess it is sort of hard to tell.
The fundamental thing about the zone at the end of the day is a disconnect between reality and like consequences or results. Mm-hmm. So like last year that meant that like we would play these terribly and the system would be broken apart, but it wouldn't matter because we'd get just the amount of results to like make it passable. Or later on, we wouldn't even get the results, but it wouldn't matter. There'd be no consequences. Nobody was home to know that we weren't getting the results, or they didn't care, or they decided not to act on it. This year, you know, we've got Thelwell around. Theoretically, someone is home, but it could still be something reminiscent of like the Moyes situation at United, where like it could be a while. It's like kind of similar to that, I think, because like, yeah, it's March. It's even in April, it's kind of like, well, we can't fire the guy now, or even though like at United, Moyes was clearly doing a shit job for a while, but everyone was like, we can't fire him immediately. Like, see, they just had to wait long enough. So I could see that. And I could see like if the RSL performance continues but then you get the occasional Cincinnati performance where the guys combine a little bit and we get a win. And then, but the RSL performances keep on being draws. I guess that's the thing. If the RSL performances keep on being draws and the occasional win or something, and we eke it out and the record is fine, I think that fits into our conception of the zone. Cause then it appears that Red Bull is averse, or Red Bull understands a model where potentially the manager is not as important, because we saw, you know, back in the Roxburg days, you know, they kind of just like let Pecky stick around because Roxburg was like, well, I'm really the one who's like doing the big work. Yeah. We can just have this local guy kind of be around until they moved on from that. We see that over in Europe, there's several years, you know, where Ragnik has bounced around in Leipzig and then kind of like came down to coach one season and then I was back up, where like they seem to understand that the manager is maybe not necessarily the point of the spear. So it could be the case that Thelwell is sitting around and he thinks that he could adjust something without making a change in management. I don't know.
It'll be a long time before we'll be able to tell something like that. Yeah.
But I think the framework is still potentially valid.
Is there... what is the upside in this season, do you think, if there is any? Or, like, how would it happen?
The upside, like
best like case scenario better, for the
like
team.
For us, like, what?
We discussed that in the opening, with the opening episode. I mean, but to me,
knowing the stuff
two,
that
two
we
weeks,
know about
two
the
weeks
team,
later, yeah. A lot of that's kind of evaporated for me. It just doesn't feel any different than the end, like late summer last year.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like it's
we're
not,
just back to where we were.
Yeah. I guess
there was this kind of hope where like we could get like a clean reset with the off season, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's the case anymore.
Right. I guess my question then is like, if this team does like get to a level of satisfaction for us, that's now kind of seemingly necessarily without Chris Armas.
I mean, I guess it would be getting enough of those Cincinnati games And then, you know, if I mean, I guess the big barrier that I'm realizing now is exactly this Parker thing, is that I could see a scenario where this gets fixed by somebody subbing in Amro for Parker. But at the same time, everything we've seen over the last 18 months indicates that Armis does not understand he needs to do that. Maybe he does. Maybe he will. Maybe, you know, these kind of flagrant instances will make it more obvious to him, because he does seem to like adjusting the lineup week to week. I mean, that was something he did a lot last year. It's like, oh, well, this lineup won last week. Let's keep doing that.
He certainly will put guys in the doghouse.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, maybe that improves. The caveat for this week as well is that it is away. It is at elevation. You know, the guys are still, we're still tired, which kind of makes the whole thing about like, oh, you can't press 90 minutes kind of ring a little hollow in a way too. Cause it's like, look at that. Look at the goal that they concede in stoppage time anyway. They're fucking gassed already. You know, like maybe, I don't know. It didn't help much, is it? It did it. And you sacrificed any sort of goal production anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just no way to like look at Tarek and Parker and say that Parker was better in any way, shape, or form, because Tarek had to cover for Parker, but also Segrest, who we just haven't talked about yet, who was arguably the worst defender that we had on the field, worst player we had on the field this weekend.
Yeah, which I think, you know, Matt had a good post, I think, just pointing out that it's wild that we've returned to fill a starting position from the draft. My comment to that was that I think, you know, Chris Duvall is a good look at the trajectory of how that strategy has evolved over the last 5 years. In 2015, when Chris Duvall was our right back, it was still like the end of the era where it was like he kind of still needed to fill out the lineup with somebody like that, like a draft guy, and it didn't really stick out. So it was like, yeah, this is pretty good. This is pretty fine for what we need to do in 14 to 15. And then as it went on and he kept playing, it's like, okay, this is viable. You don't have to do this. Now there's more allocation money and stuff, but he's still good enough. And then by the time he left, it was actually remarkable thinking back how everyone in the fan base and everyone kind of seemed to understand, yeah, it's kind of time for Chris to move on maybe. And it's like, we're kind of trying to bump up to a new level where our fullbacks are the quality of Kemar Lawrence and Amir Murillo. Now all of a sudden we've zipped back in time to like 2012 or 2007, if you will, and you know, drafting somebody 10th is seen as immediate move.
Drafting a 4-year college player, so he's gotten to age 22 without playing any pro minutes, and we're just plugging him in to what is supposedly a super sophisticated system on day one.
Yeah,
I'd also like to point out that Chris Duvall can finish his first season, and we had to rely on Richard Eckersley for the like latter part of that season. That's
true, because it's the whole thing about, you know, college stamina. Guys not having as much stamina.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Richard Eckersley.
Wow.
I mean,
shout out to Richard Eckersley living his life in Canada right now.
Yeah, he runs like a vegan farm.
He's crushing
it. Richard Eckersley is going to be Michael Caine in Children of Men.
Children of Men.
Is CJ Brown kind of immune to any
coronavirus?
Sort of, to coronavirus, yeah.
He might be. He might be the solution.
Is he immune to coronavirus and to any sort of scrutiny or the prospect of like being replaced?
I don't know, at this point, I feel like if the coaching staff goes, all of them go, right?
But he like in particular came from like, I mean, Orlando is just synonymous with bad defense, right?
Yeah.
I think the exception was like Amro Tarek being Chris's like guy. A pretty good guy. Yeah. And everyone I remember like from Orlando Twitter being like, this is actually quality. Like it's a good pickup. But like CJ Brown himself, I mean, came from one of the worst defenses.
Yeah.
He's just like a 2007 Chicago Fire guy.
Yeah.
And like, he's just producing like just terrible defense game after game, right? But will he ever be scrutinized?
I mean, he might be the reason we have Amro, but like, I don't think, I feel like
I'm not even saying that.
Right.
But I
think that like that kind of position does kind of like fall under the responsibility of the head coach in a way.
It's part of, I mean, we've talked a little bit about it recently where the part of the joy of the team before when they were good was that like every game, every play, every goal felt like building up to something, you know, big and important that everybody was on the same page about. And that carried over even to like the off the field, like hot stove stuff where every time we got a new player, it was clear what he was going to do, what role he was filling, who he was replacing. Okay. but now we have a team of like 11 wingers and a 4-year college starter at fullback. Mm-hmm. And it's just clearly something that even beyond the in-game tactics, just strategizing how the team is going to be built, what sort of players we need for which position is just a complete free for all.
Yeah.
That's as concerning and confidence shattering for me as anything that I see on the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have Segrist and Nealis going immediately into 11s when academy guys seem to have been walled off.
Though we do seemingly have a Segrist replacement. Yeah, there's
rumors that Jason Pendant.
Jason Pendant.
Yeah.
If you're Cajun. Yeah.
Yeah. he actually has an extremely similar resume as Kyle Duncan, to be honest.
Yeah. Just kind of, well, I mean, Kyle Duncan never broke through the first team and this guy has, but beyond that, yeah, just kind of like a smaller, like yo-yo French pro team that, you know, apparently he's been like captain recently and like has, you know, been a pretty regular guy in the team for the last few years. He's like 23, 24, who all reports seem to be that he's going to be coming over here in the summer when his contract runs out there. So apparently that's, you know, waiting in the wings. But in the meantime, we're going to have 3 or 4 months of, you know, just kind of winging it in professional games.
How soon do we see like Amra Tarik as left back? Because I feel like that's going to be.
We didn't see it at all last year.
We saw it one time last year. One game. Yeah, and it was at home, right?
Was it a mid-game adjustment though?
I don't think it was. Okay. No, it was from the start. I forgot who we played, but he did start at left back and he like looked fine, I guess. But like at this rate, like Segrist, like I just feel like if Segrist plays at Minnesota, it's going to be kind of embarrassing. Like he will get just obliterated by a team that scored 8 goals on the road in 2 games. I mean, like that's going to be crazy. Yeah. And Tolkien is 17 still. He's still young. And I just, I mean, who knows? Armis is the type to just kind of throw him into the wolves.
Maybe just like, but, just go in.
I mean, there's not been a good record with this regime and youth integration for throwing guys out there. I mean, we've seen several players get sent to the Wolves and die under this thing compared to the fostering of, you know, Adams and Davis coming up. I mean, I guess like by contrast, White has done okay, but White again fits more the profile of more of Segrist or something. You know, he's a draft player, he was in the PDL squad, but he's a college guy, he's older. I mean, so was Barlow too, also another draft guy, you know. So you know, here's hoping. That said, you know, 4 points on a tough away trip, or going into this away trip, you know, not the worst if we can turn it around, but suffice it to say our concerns are, well, you know, specific concerns in the actual games that are being played are being repeated so far a little bit this season. So that is the criteria that we are evaluating the team against. And I invite anyone who wants to say otherwise to specifically point out why they think it's fine, actually. So with Minnesota, I mean, do we have anything else to say besides fear for our back line?
I barely know. Like, I feel like Minnesota has like remade their roster like 6 times since they've been in the league, so I have no idea like who's on. I know that Darwin's not even on.
Is Aiko Parra?
Aiko Parra is still on. Like, I think he's scored some of their goals early this year.
He scored two theirs last week.
Yeah. But beyond that, I'm kind of at a
loss. Ethan Finley's back.
Oh wow!
Is it them? Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He's with them.
They have that Gregos guy, the big tall midfielder.
Alonso plays.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. They have Alonso now.
And then Kevin Molino is now their you know, guy in midfield, their offensive guy in midfield. But yeah, we'll see. It's
Molino was at what, Minnesota or at Orlando? Right?
Yeah, he's a Heath. He was with Heath in Orlando in USL.
And like maybe more importantly, Minnesota is a confident team right now. now, and they're going to be looking to assert themselves and celebrate their early success at home. So this could be a game to watch out for how the team responds to pressure, to a big environment, that kind of thing.
To a team that's not, maybe less so with Salt Lake, but Cincinnati was just like scared when we were going up against them. I mean, that was not a team that was looking to capitalize on any mistakes we made. Yeah. And they still managed to, but yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So going into Minnesota, how do you think it's going to go?
I mean, we said it. We're going to eke out a 1-0 win somehow. And then we'll just be like, I don't know. That's how I feel.
I'm trying to battle the two wolves inside of me. One wolf is that our offensive production will be squat, like we've seen. The other wolf is that obviously we will get three penalties somehow.
I was going to say it's going to be a draw, but it's going to be like 4-4. And all of our goals are going to be golazos, and that's going to be the narrative after the game. Look at these sick goals that we can score.
Four Danny Royer goals.
Yeah, something like it that. Was. Instead of look at what a mess we are.
Yeah, CJ Brown taught me through togetherness how to strike the ball like that.
Yeah. There's going to be no handballs because we're not playing Vancouver.
Dang. Maybe this is the game, though, where the strategy finally works.
I could see it being like an early red card for Minnesota or something. Iko
Parr is very tall. His hands are higher up on his body. So have your launch angle a little bit steeper.
Armas saw that Douglas Martinez handball and was like, oh my God, wait a minute. He's like, guys, I need you when you're defending to suggest to you guys, hey, I saw this thing that if you jump with your arms up, you jump higher, you jump better.
If you jump with your forearm, like right in front of your face.
Guys, you need to tell this to the other team's attackers, and they're going to do it, and they're always going to invalidate their own goals.
It's a copycat league, and everybody looks to us to set the tactical standards.
Guys, when people are going for a ball in the box, just reach out for a high five.
Yeah. They're going to have to high five you back. Who wouldn't high five you
back? Just go back at halftime. No one's high fiving due to coronavirus.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
CJ Brown will have the answer for that.
Oh my God. Coronavirus. Ugh. I think they'll probably play this game by Saturday. I think Minnesota's fine.
Oh yeah. Also, like, Serie A did just suspend the league.
It's been suspended in my heart for a long time.
Yeah, what's that? Is that a hockey league?
I guess. I don't know. They play them in large, empty cavernous stadiums to begin with.
Is that the seventh division of the English soccer football pyramid?
Probably. Right. I mean, like, do you think, like, it Seattle, I feel like, at some point might just play behind closed doors.
Oh, yeah. What if they cancel the season?
Like, right after this, and we're just undefeated.
Yeah, it's going to be the 1994 Expos / Astros season. They're going to be like, oh, we would have won. Chris Armas would have won if it weren't for the fucking coronavirus, you guys. Literally projected to have the world record points number. Fucking Liverpool season.
What if we come out, like, you know, come out the winners in this because they shield Chris Armas from the public for the rest of the year to protect him from Chris coronavirus? Chris
Armas doesn't speak to the press anymore.
Yeah, he's only 7 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
They convert the press conferences to a sitting town hall with two people.
Yeah. Meanwhile, all that's missing is I guess DC kind of has their own version of Chris, but he can speak. But all that's missing is that for City to also hire a manager that they hide in 7 minute spells, and then both of them disappear. And I don't know what we're talking about, though. I see no parallels to anything that's going on. So anyway. So I guess with that, watch out for a mysterious man named PB who might sneak up behind you while you're making a phone call to somebody who ratted you out to the FBI. And with that, we hope you're alive next week.